drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. How can big business improve the environmental sustainability of their practice? And does that come at a cost for the company, or can it be, you know, a solid investment, something that actually makes them money? Leith Sharp is the Director of Executive Education of Sustainability Leadership at Harvard University. And Paul Edwards is the General Manager of Workplace Experiences at Mervac and was previously the company's Group General Manager Sustainability. Thank you to both of you for coming in. I'll start with you, Leith. Sustainability leadership. What does that mean? I mean, give me a quick overview of the sort of thing you teach.
It's one of the most important arenas of leadership for the 21st century. It's an arena of leadership that focuses on the context. It focuses on the world around us and ensuring that not only our own individual organization is thriving, but that it's doing so in a way that isn't at the same time compromising everybody else's opportunities to thrive. So it has dimensions that certainly relate to our relationship with our planet, all those planetary life support systems that humankind depend upon. And it also is very much about our relationship with each other, how we distribute our access to resources, and how we foster engagement as a society, engagement and inclusion.
Are we just talking about environmental sustainability here, or are there other concerns as well?
Definitely not, no. There's only so much that you can do to really tackle our global environmental crisis without simultaneously addressing our social crisis. Right now, there are 8 men on this planet that have the same amount of wealth as 3 billion people. So we've got an extraordinary challenge ahead in redistributing access to our resources, access to education, and inclusion in our political processes.
So, Paul, why did a company like Mervac decide to aim for sustainability? You know, what was the motive? Is it about reputation, revenue? What was the driving force?
It's just simply good for business. As Leith has said, it's much more than just the environment. But if you look at the environment for 1 second, if you reduce energy consumption, if you reduce water consumption, if you increase waste recycling, you actually reduce your costs and save money. Save energy, save money. But then there's the other side. We've got a limited amount of natural resources. So how do you ensure that you're reusing and repurposing what resources are out there? And then from a social side, it's really important that we are driving social outcomes that improve the communities in which we operate, whether that's communities in office buildings or whether that's communities as in residential communities. By delivering a sustainable outcome, we're actually improving the asset value and creating new value streams for our business. And also the important thing around sustainability is it is the old story of the three-legged stool in that it's environmental, social and financial. And so if you lose one of those legs, then it falls over. So it's really important that financial is part of the discussion that you make around sustainability. So our business just saw it as a good business opportunity.
Okay, so it's a good business opportunity, but what's kind of the lead time? Doesn't it cost a company to invest in these programs? Because there's kind of a risk in terms of when you get that return, right?
Some programs do cost money, but I think, or like all businesses, we look at the business case for delivering these outcomes. And we take a view that some of the solutions we need to do, they have a long-term position, but we take short-term steps to get there. So, for example, we've set ourselves as a business a requirement to be net positive by 2030, which essentially means from an energy standpoint, we would generate more energy than we consume. But to get to that point, we set ourselves a short-term target to reduce our energy consumption by 20% by 2018 and to increase our energy production to 1 megawatt by 2018. That has enabled us to identify where the risks are, to take a lower initial cost upfront cost, capital cost, with short-term gains so that we're actually defining as a business where we are going to get those new revenue streams from.
Let's talk about something very specific. I mean, you're working, for instance, on zero-cost homes. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, so actually it's called The House With No Bills, and this is an interesting initiative.
Can I have it?
You can, exactly, and that's the reaction we want, and that, I think that's great because...
It comes, can I say, with a little bit of disbelief. Please elaborate.
Okay. So if I had said to you we're doing a project called Zero Carbon Homes, would you have had the same reaction?
Look, I probably would have, but that I'm a journalist. Wrong person to ask. Keep going.
What we did was we looked at what is our customers' problems, what the things we're trying to solve. And one is around affordability. The other one is around environmental, and the other one's around innovation. People like innovation. So we actually looked at those issues, and we identified this solution of a house with no bills. And essentially what we're doing is putting solar panels and battery storage enables you to do this now, to take that energy proportion off the grid. And we're looking at it from the angle of environment and of affordability, because obviously if someone isn't paying any energy bills, then they've got money in their pockets to spend on other things, including affordable housing. Because we now have battery storage, and we also have technology that enables you to track when it is best use of your solar panels. So i.e. put the washing on during the day or the dishwasher on during the day when you've got full energy being produced, and not in the evening when you're draining your battery. So it's actually about the way you use the system as well. And technology enables us now to do that, to look at weather patterns, to actually ensure that we're getting the optimal performance out of the solar panels and the batteries.
Leith, is that a familiar story, the work that they're doing around all of this? Is that what you're hearing from other companies as well?
I look at these projects through a slightly different lens. Like when I hear stories and I look at case stories like Mervac, which is one of our leading sustainability enterprises in the private sector here, what I'm seeing in that work is agility. They are manifesting a kind of fitness that all organisations should be envying. It's a capacity for stimulating good ideas in their company. I mean, who would think of a house with no bills? And who would think of interfacing technology with occupant engagement, occupant behaviour, technology that takes advantage of both a more holistic viewpoint, but also an inclusive viewpoint of involving the occupants in the design and operations of the home. So that story underneath it is an example of a kind of creativity, a kind of engagement, and a kind of agility. I think our business sector is having to really grapple with that kind of fitness. Now, many of them are nowhere near it. And this is why I think when you come across organisations that aren't addressing climate change, that aren't concerned with inclusion and equity, I would just say they're wussing out. They're not confronting the need to get that kind of fitness, and they will fall behind. And that's what, when Paul said, it's good business sense. If you don't do it, you're literally going to fall behind.
So agility, it's one of, well, it was for a while the Prime Minister's favourite words in Australia. How can companies be agile? How do they make their ideas reality? Because it's like fantastic on paper.
And that's the problem. We've only been really thinking of it on paper, but in the last couple of years, I've had this opportunity to work with thousands of organisations, and we've actually started visually mapping out the life cycle of ideas and exactly charting out all the moves people make to take an idea from when it's first thought of all the way through that difficult journey to scaling it out. And after mapping 1,000 idea life cycles, we've unearthed what we think of as the secret life of ideas. And there really is a very consistent pattern. And in that pattern, we see where, in many cases, the life of an idea experiences enormous amounts of friction, where it's one step forward and two steps back, three steps forward, five steps back. And at the end of its life, even if you do actually implement the idea, everybody is so exhausted and demoralized by how hard it was that the very next idea that comes across their desk, they just want to avoid. But we've also found patterns where we've found flow, where every move that the organisation has made has been very much forward and very efficient in moving that idea all the way to full scale. And we've looked at what is it that correlates to that flow experience and what is it that's correlating to that friction experience. One of the main things is the overuse of hierarchy, the overuse of what we call command control, that formal structure of direction and authority coming down the chain of command. When that's overemphasized, you end up with disinvolvement of people across your organization and a kind of exclusion of the locations where a lot of your best ideas actually can come from. And you're also not fostering a culture that is accepting failure and accepting that when you're doing something new for the first time, there's a lot of learning it by doing it. You have to have a culture around you that allows for that iteration and learning, piloting, de-risking those ideas, and then scaling out once you've really understood how to move it forward. Very clear recurring patterns and insights. And whenever we come up to a front runner like Mirvac, when we look underneath what they're doing, how they're doing it, those patterns are there as well.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis. Paul Edwards and Leith Sharp are with me in the drawing room, and we're talking about corporate sustainability. In 2015, the UN introduced a set of sustainability goals. Was that important? Does it really matter to business what governments or the UN are saying around issues like this, Leith?
Oh, it's crucial. Oh, goodness, yes. The Sustainable Development Goals are one of our most extraordinary human achievements. Over 190 nation members of 190 countries agreed to 17 goals that collectively those goals amount to a strategic plan for human survival in the 21st century. And in those 17 goals, we've really understood the interdependence of everything from our relationship with these complex planetary life support systems like climate and biodiversity, along with the importance of equity and inclusion, getting rid of poverty once and for all, really focusing on gender equity, building trust in our institutions, fostering engagement globally, nationally, and locally. It's all in there in those 17 goals. They're elegant, they're robust, and I think they finally clarify when we say sustainability, what do we mean?
And I mean, I know, Paul, you can only talk for the company you work for, but clearly, you know, you're across business and the way that these issues are being tackled. Where do you think Australia sits in kind of the global space on sustainable businesses? Are Australian businesses doing this, or do we have some catching up to do?
I couldn't have asked you to ask me a better question, actually.
Perfect. I'm so glad we're both happy.
Because Mirvac actually were named the number one real estate company globally for sustainability last year on the Dow Jones Sustainability Index. And we have several of our peers are up there with us or close behind us, which is a great, I think, signal of where Australia sits in the corporate world. We are pushing the boundaries continuously in Australia. I think, like all areas of sustainability, because it is quite a broad area, there are areas where we can continue to improve. But I know at Mirvac, we're very proud of the fact that we were one of the first companies globally to set ourselves this long-term goal of being net positive. When we did it, was launched by our CEO with a view that if we get 80% of the way there, it's better than not trying at all, which I think at the time I thought was incredibly courageous. And it really set us on a pathway to saying to our business, let's innovate, let's come up with ways that we can deliver this and think differently. But I think the Australian marketplace is one of innovation. It's generally one that likes to try and test and pilot ideas and initiatives. So it's doing well in comparison to our peers globally.
And Leith, I mean, Mirvac and Harvard, they're pretty big businesses. Do you think there are lessons that can work for other organisations, small business, government, not-for-profits? Can they take a different approach? Because obviously the kind of the scale is very different.
Particularly around the question of these are well-resourced institutions, both of them as well. And absolutely, the patterns that we've distilled out by mapping the life of ideas, what you're really talking about is how do humans come together to optimize their capacity for creativity, for learning, and for that group intelligence that is a unique human potential. You know, about 80% of the workforce is disengaged at work, which is an extraordinary indictment on the organizational model that we have. And this is not just corporate phenomena, it's in government, it's in education, it's in military. That emphasis on command control, the 20th century organizational model was heavily command control. We're really needing to move now towards a much more adaptive organizational design. And that is the case whether you're a small to medium-sized enterprise, whether you're a local government, you're a school, you're a corporation. The 21st century is really about leading a new kind of synergy. Yes, we need hierarchy. We need to have clear processes and rules, and we need to get very good at the things that we know how to do. But we also need this more adaptive, inclusive, collaborative, purpose-driven capacity to convene. One of the interesting things, every idea that we've mapped has this balance of part of the time we've needed in the life of any one idea, you need both moves that are specifically about tapping your formal hierarchical structure, and you need moves that are much more adaptive and they're about engaging complex stakeholder ecosystems in shared purpose and collaborative thinking. Every idea needs a balance of both of those traits in its life. And I think what we've unearthed in this work is that the future of leadership is moving from between both of those states and optimizing that synergy and getting people to code switch as they need from collaborative, purpose-driven to very efficient execution dynamics.
Thank you to both of you for coming in. It's been a really interesting conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patricia.
Leith Sharp and Paul Edwards have been my guests in the drawing room. Paul is the General Manager of Workplace Experiences at Mervac, and Leith is the Director of Executive Education of Sustainability Leadership at Harvard University.